as a way of getting an image on the screen. It's a clumsy way, but it's a way, you know, and it cost basically nothing. She made her film for $50. There was a guy named Robert Rodriguez who's got a film that Columbia is releasing called El Mariachi. And it's incredible. The trailer that Columbia put on the logo that Columbia put on the head of the film cost more than the film itself, $7,000 US.
Wow.
The filmmaker financed it by checking into a medical testing clinic somewhere in Texas for 4 weeks. You don't get to see daylight. They poke needles in you and give you all kinds of stuff to eat and sweat out. And he met, while he was in there, the guy who eventually played the lead part in his film. He wrote the script, and he went out and made this film in 16mm for $7,000. A lot of people will say, that's impossible, but when you hear this guy's explanation of how he did it, it's quite feasible.
Hmm.
And, I mean, there are ways. Where there's a will, there's a way. You will get your film made.
Yeah.
As a first-time director, you are not going to go out and get, unless your film won an Academy Award, your short film, you're not going to get a $1 million or $2 million budget to make your film with. You might be able to get $50,000 from the Canada Council and be able to patchwork $200,000 together from here and there. But going the route with BC Film and with the agencies and trying to get a broadcaster and a distributor and all that sort of thing is going to be a real, real problem. I would recommend keeping on making the shorter films that you can actually get financed, and you will get there.
Hmm. You know, just from what you're saying, it's like everything you've heard about the film industry is true. You know, scraping up your leftover student loan or whatever for films.
There's always exceptions to the rule, but everybody is not a Jim Jarmusch, you know, and even he did his film for, you know, as much as I don't know, just incredibly small amounts of money relative to what people expect to get to make their first feature films these days.
Hmm. Well, you sound like an incredible success story so far. I guess I should ask you something about the film. Just, you know, more on about Vancouver. Did you get most of the cast from Vancouver, the Vancouver area? Or I know there was Susan Hogan, who's been in quite a few Canadian productions, and the lead
is Robert Wisden.
Robert Wisden, yes.
Robert Wisden had led in a couple of significant Canadian series, played the lead in a couple of movies of the week, and several movies of the week, and an episodic guest star in every series that ran in Canada, a couple of American productions, and was absolutely perfect for our requirements. In fact, what I saw in him in the very beginning, along with the director, was something very close to the character that was written on the page. In some ways, don't take that the wrong way, Robert, but I mean that's what casting is, you know, casting to type as often as you can, because it makes everybody's job a lot easier.
Yeah, one of the things that I was impressed with was that, you know, just a full slate of Canadian talent, and including Christopher Plummer, a little cameo, I imagine.
It was a cameo, but it's like a 10-minute role in the film, and it's also, he's one of the pivotal characters. He's the one that's dangling our main guy by puppet strings all the way through the film, and he's actually, you know, the other side of the plot the whole way, what's causing all these events to happen. And, so he's only has that one appearance, but he's a critical one. You asked also about, casting locally and so on. When you don't have any money, you can't afford to pay travel, you know, to have people read and try them out for your film and rehearsal and hotel per diems, all that stuff. I mean, it's just not possible. So you go with what you can get your hands on locally and affordably. Susan Hogan happened to be in town working on Liar Liar for the CBC, and we held her over for 5 days at the end, and
Good idea. That was
minimally at our expense, no plane costs involved. Similarly for Christopher Plummer, he was here working on, I can't remember what the series was, but it was an Aaron Spelling movie of the week, and was here basically at someone else's expense. The hotel was already being covered. And he's a friend of my family, so I mean
the Massey family.
The Massey family, and Plummer loved the script. He, you know, when he first read it, he called me back and said, "God damn it! Why don't the guys who have the real money ever send me material like this to work with? You know, it's unfair."
And yeah, I've been missing him for a long time in movies, ever since the '60s movies. He's made a few really good ones since.
I haven't seen the Star Trek film, but I mean, he's in all these things, and he's actually, you know, been highly praised for that role.
But really good actor.
His bread and butter these days is Counter-Strike, which is a Canadian Alliance show. It's a French-Canadian co-production. And I don't know how much anybody's heart is in that stuff. It's just television fodder, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, as I said, your film Impolite is playing at The Ridge on October 13th at 9:30, and at Vancouver Center 1 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on October the 15th. Thanks very much for coming in. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Yeah, we're opening the Kamloops, the first annual Kamloops Meeting of the Waters Festival on the 23rd of October. And we are the gala opening event on Friday night, the 23rd.
Oh, okay. Well, as I said, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Right, well, here are the somewhat humble beginnings of the CITR 1990 Christmas blooper tape from news, sports, current affairs, arts. Well, spoken word, really. Little bits from here and there that we've had go wrong at various times throughout the year. All of it's from, or at least so far, all of it's taken from things that have actually happened on air. Chunks of it are off the logger tape, so that's proof. And here we go. Various clips. I'll just throw them together, and when I've got something together, then we'll actually do some editing and put it together into some sort of half-decent format. So we're going to start off with a blooper that was taken from the, not the Arts Cafe, Hearsay, from November the 18th, 1990. This was live on air. Antia beginning a story with one of her live on-air guests.
Michael Dolman joins us now. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Well, you've written a children's story called Santa's Diet, and it's a somewhat...
Santa's Diet.
Santa's Diet. Aha. Okay. That's quite a large... quite a big difference there. Can you tell...
Embarrassment big time. That was Hearsay from the 18th of November, 1990, Antira Werda. Well, here is a familiar voice and a familiar face, bright red, as is often the case on the dinner report. This is from the 1st of November, and it's the extra to a sportscast, or at least it was an attempt at an extra for a sportscast.
Thursday evening, that is the CITR Sports.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. If you wanted to get over to the stadium, or at least the, what do you call it, the gym, to do the football, basketball broadcast, you'd better hurry. You said you wanted to be there for 5:30, and that is the time right now, so we'll let you get out of here.
Ooh, let me get out of there too, please. Ouch. This is really a very special moment on the tape. I think it can be said without hesitation that the person I'm about to present is truly a warm, close, dear, near, personal friend of Paul Martin Jr.'s.
This is like when I had Mike Harcourt on my show. We did the interview and he talked to me about having his tremendous caucus. I just played with that one.
We all have days where we get up in the morning and a couple of hours later we sincerely wish that we hadn't. Then those of us in radio sometimes have days where we get up in the morning, go on the air, and sincerely wish that we hadn't. November the 18th was kind of like that at Hearsay. The saga continues. This is still Santa's death diet.
Okay, well, it sounds fascinating, and we'll, in a couple of moments, you'll be reading us the story itself, correct?
Great.
Okay, just one second. Oh, is my cart machine on?
Let's get real, real gone.
Yeah, let's get real, real gone indeed. Rule number one in radio interviewing is to make it sound like you're in control the whole time. If you've got a boring interview on your hands, you can make it sound like you've just been fetched up with a lousy guest. The best way to make your audience know that you're in control, you know what's going on, is to make that first and all-important question a real zinger.
Let's start by asking how many volunteers are listed in the directory.
Well, the directory actually doesn't list volunteers. What it lists is opportunities to volunteer.
That's actually what I meant to say.
Okay. So what it is it's a list.
To quote the CITR Arts Department manual from 1990, live interviews certainly have their appeal, but the advantage of a pre-recorded interview is that it can be edited.
So, question just completely vanished from my head. What was I going to ask you now? Oh, yeah, right.
Meanwhile, in international news tonight, Israeli troops thwarted a two-pronged Palestinian sea raid today, killing four guerrillas and capturing 12.
We all know how accurate the clocks are here at CITR, so for those all-important time checks, we often find ourselves using secondary sources, which aren't always that accurate themselves.
And, I'm not exactly sure what time it is. It's probably around 1:15. I think my watch is wrong. I gave you the wrong time earlier, but I'm sure the afternoon DJ will come in and tell you the correct time when he does get here.
Let me see some others from Vancouver here. Shaughnessy Elementary and Point Grey Secondary.
Thanks, Ian. Good afternoon, everyone. The Montreal Canadiens are waiting with bated breath this afternoon in hopes that their goaltender Patrick Roy will be okay.
Don't you just hate it on TV when you get last-minute substitutions? That World War II documentary that was going to be just perfect for your poli-sci paper has been replaced due to technical difficulties with a Led Zeppelin retrospective that lasts 6 hours. Bummer. Sometimes, though, last-minute substitutions can be a heck of a lot of fun.
Good morning. This is Barry Greenfeld live on CITR and filling in for Antia, who couldn't make it today. We're going to do a little music this morning and some sports and a little bit of news. Right now, here's Bob's Your Uncle. That's CITR Sports. This is Barry Greenfeld, who usually does the sports, but I'm filling in for Antia for the rest of the morning show. On this day in 1892, John Augustus Larson was born. He invented the lie detector. Well, no, he didn't. I was just kidding. Actually, he did invent it. Well, who knows? And a quote of the day from left winger Al Stewart of the New Jersey Devils explaining his fighting techniques on the ice. I make sure I don't punch any helmets because that can really hurt. You're still with CITR. It's 8:02, and coming up, we got some Muddy Waters from his album Can't Get No Grindin'. We're going to play that for you in a couple minutes. This is Barry Greenfeld sitting in for Antia, and the news will be coming up a little bit after 8, a little later than right now. And here we go with some Muddy Waters on CITR. FM 101.9.
It is now 8 o'clock, time to go to the BBC World Service News headquarters in London, England. For the news, you're listening to CITR FM 102. We're back.
From CBC Radio News, World Report.
We seem to have fallen just a wee bit short of London this morning. Is that the CBC somewhere? I guess it's Toronto.
Dramatic development in the Gulf. Saddam Hussein says the hostages are free to go. Buying time in Brussels, the GATT talks are still on hold. And quiet commemoration. The survivors of the Montreal massacre remember the horrible events of a year ago. Now the details. Barbara?
Good morning.
Well, I think we're going to run into trouble with our friends at the CBC if we continue to broadcast there. We have technical difficulties this morning with the BBC. Somebody somewhere misunderstood me when I said I wanted the BBC this morning. We'll see if we can sort this out for you and have the BBC World Service for you. A New York man has been arrested after a three-year-old gun showed up at his nursery, after a three-year-old, rather, showed up at his nursery school with a loaded handgun. It was stealing snowblowers, but never mind. 8 minutes past five, past 8 o'clock is the time. Can you tell I do the afternoon program? Can you tell I'm not awake this morning? 8 minutes past 8 o'clock is the time. You're listening to the morning show from CITR News. Let's wrap this up right here with a look at the weather forecast.
Hello?
Oh, there we go. Something happened. And then I said, watch out, world, watch out, world. I said, watch out, world, I said, watch out.
CITR presents Warner Recording Artist Built to Spill with special guest The Delusions, Friday, June 4th and Saturday, June 5th at the Starfish Room.
Rap is cool, rap is the best music. Funk, rap, that's the only music and you gotta dance.
Thank you, Benson.
My name is Sister Chen. Hockey superstar.
Herman, you wait.
Eddie. Never mind.
Eddie.
Eddie what? Thank you.
Hey, Jeff Godfrey.
Brian what?
Macaulay.
James Derek Holmes.
Mike Swift.
We're not sure. That might be Chris.
Hey, I'm Chris.
We're not sure. That might be Mike.
This rat has no life. No life at all. Signed, R Square is the best in the world.
Rap is cool, rap is the best music. Funk, rap, that's the only music and you gotta dance.
Name.
Oh, my name is Nadir Peretti.
Oh well, this is Todd Russell.
Derek Holmes, swear it and call Mr. Suffren a foreign letter word.
So did Jeff. Jeff Godfrey called Mr. Suffren a 10-letter word.
Well...
Joe Block.
Thank you, Duncan.
My name is Kirby.
Billy.
Hi.
Billy.
Yes, that's been an unusual reaction.
How are you going?
Alan.
Hello, my name is Aaron Suen.
David McFadden, otherwise known as Buck.
All right, gentlemen, go to bed. Let's go on bed, lights out, and turn off that stupid music.